Hello, and welcome to the Easy Agile podcast for 2021. Each episode, we talk with some of the most interesting people in tech, in agile, and in leading businesses around the world to share fresh perspectives and learn from the wealth of knowledge each guest has to share. Talking all things from building authentic workplace cultures to implementing agile, women in leadership, and mindset. We have some amazing guests lined up this season, as well as trialing some different styles of conversations, and we can't wait to hear what you all think. So if you haven't already, don't forget to subscribe and leave us a review in your favorite podcasting app. Let's jump into this month's episode.
G'day folks, Nick Muldoon with co-founder, co-CEO of Easy Agile, Dave Elkin. Before we kick off, we'd just like to do an acknowledgement to the traditional custodians of the land on which we broadcast and record today, the Wadi Wadi people of the Dharawal Nation. We pay our respects to elders past and present and extend that same respect to any of our Aboriginal folks that are listening today. Dave,
hello.
This is a bit of a reflection on 5.5 years of business.
Business? Yeah, roller coaster. It's been great fun.
It is a roller coaster, isn't it? I guess where's the best place to start? The best place to start is at the start.
Yeah, I mean, we can go before the start. There's always a good prequel. We can do a prequel episode later, I guess. But I guess the earliest I remember working with you, Nick, was on level 15 at Kent Street, Atlassian. And there's this redheaded guy down one end of the building working on Atlassian Greenhopper, and I was busy working on the Kick-Ass team at the time, building the new issue navigator, which is now the old issue navigator, back in 2011. And yeah, and then you scooted off to San Francisco, and I followed eventually, and then we hung out there for a while, didn't we?
Yeah. Yeah, I remember that because we sat down. I was back to get married, and we sat down and had a coffee and a yarn about you and Rin relocating to San Francisco and how it had been for Liz and I and what the process was like and all that sort of stuff.
And that's a great opportunity to acknowledge our wives in this amazing journey as well. And if it wasn't for those, we probably wouldn't have gone to San Francisco in the first place because they're a large part of the promotion of going overseas and doing that.
Oh, yeah.
For me anyway, and for yourself, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah. Well, Liz, you know, it was this big conversation about go overseas and experience something new, and I was quite comfortable, you know, in Sydney and enjoying my role with product management at Atlassian. But yeah, it was really a push to try and experience and do something a bit different.
Absolutely. Same here. And yeah, and you were there for over 4 years in San Francisco, and I was there for three. But yeah, you came home, you got married, and I just grabbed you for coffee, and we sat there in Martin Place and had a chat, and you said, yeah, it's great, come over. You can stay with me for 2 weeks. I'm like, oh, I barely know you.
Yeah, but it was so much. I mean, even not knowing Liz or I, it was way better than the alternative. So the Atlassian, for folks listening in, the Atlassian apartment at the time was in a fairly rough part of the Tenderloin in San Francisco. Probably wasn't the greatest introduction if someone was relocating to San Francisco.
No. But to cut a long story, there's a lot of good stories there I'm sure we can tell one day. But yeah, we eventually, we both had daughters in San Francisco and we wanted to be home and be closer to family. And and we came home to Sydney and found that the traffic is 20% worse or 50% worse than when we left. And we're uprooted, right? So once you've been uprooted, you've got to plant yourself back somewhere. And it's quite easy to change at that point. And you'd chosen to go outside of Sydney.
Yeah, Wollongong regional lifestyle.
Yeah, where you can have a full block of land to yourself without breaking the bank, and you can, well, relatively speaking, like that times have changed a bit in that space. But since then, you know, that's what we were chasing, wasn't it? And
yeah,
we looked at, well, you looked at Newcastle and
looked at Newcastle, looked at Brisbane, Adelaide, we even went through Wagga Wagga. We had the most amazing Indian meal in Wagga Wagga. We were almost like, you know, this is the place. Like, if we can get food, like this in Wagga, we're sweet. You know, bit too cold. No, but ended up settling on Wollongong in large part because of the proximity to the beach and the early start discovery space for the kids, and just a pretty cool, chill place to raise a family. And there were aspects of it as well, I think, that really reminded Liz and I of San Francisco. You know, we used to go to the farmer's market down at the ferry building a lot on a Saturday morning, and we found the farmers market on a Friday, you know, in Wollongong on Crown Street Mall. So there were these similarities to kind of, you know, enable us to transfer from one city to the other fairly easily.
Yeah. It's a pretty easy place to live and to be. The way I like to term it is it's just far enough away from Sydney.
Yeah, nice little national park in between.
That's right. It can't really come and encroach on us. It's like not allowed. You can't build there. So you're always going to have that buffer. But I do remember going back to Sydney for a niece's birthday and having been charged $9 an hour for parking at the beach, considering I didn't have a parking sticker anymore because I wasn't a resident. And I was like, wow, it's really expensive. But for anyone coming to Wollongong or the Illawarra, you can park for free at the beach. That's just kind of like a good litmus test of the difference that we're talking about here.
Mm. Yeah, and I guess, you know, this regional life, like we didn't really have a tech industry here. You know, we come from Sydney where, you know, 10 years ago there was this emerging tech scene and you know, SIDJS, SIDCSS, other meetups up there. And in San Francisco, we were thrust right in the middle of it. Like I remember we were chatting the other week about a meetup where we met the Ruby creator at a Heroku meetup, I think it was, or a session on D-Trace at that company that's gone bust now, whose name I can't even remember. But, you know, like we were in the heart of all the meetups in San Francisco. And then in Wollongong, there was none of this. And so it was like a question of what could we do to build a community here as well, try and meet other like-minded folks.
Yeah, it was definitely that desire, wasn't there? And we set out to do that. And I think it was Rin who termed it Silligong. Like I remember we were actually talking about Silligong Valley before we actually left, and we just decided to make that the name of the community.
Yeah.
I was actually looking back at my old emails the other day and I was like, oh, we actually talked about Silligong before being in Wollongong. And so that's pretty cool.
I remember early days because I think you and Rin returned on a flight with Umi, and Umi was 6 or 8 weeks old.
Yep, October.
And if I'm not mistaken, I dropped you at your mum's place so that you could catch up with, you know, your mum and Ken, and that was kind of like home base. And it was, I don't know, it was a couple of months after that or something where we finally had you down here. And I think you stayed with Liz and I when you came down here
for 2 weeks.
for another couple of weeks. And we were really talking about like the genesis of what was at the time what was termed Aregia products and a brand that we never ended up sticking with. But, you know, what do you remember about those early days and trying to get the business off the ground?
Actually, I come to think of it, you were staying in Coromore.
Coromore.
It was actually less than 2 weeks because we all had little kids and it was just a bit crazy. So I think Grin and I organized to, we came down and did inspections and we stayed with you whilst we were doing that. And then we were able to secure a place in Fairy Meadow and we moved down. So yeah, we're going back and forth a bit at that point. And yeah, and then it was just 6 months of just like literally, I didn't have a bike. I just walked to work, which is super like new to me. Like I've always caught the bus or ridden my bike. Some of you may know I've never commuted to work and I hopefully will never have to do that. And we've engineered our lives around that kind of concept. But yeah, I think that, yeah, it was really great. I was just like living within 2 kilometers walk of work. And that was for at least the first 6 months until I moved to Balgownie. But yeah, it was a great time of life and with a brand new baby and just concentrating on the business.
Trying to remember we really didn't have much of an idea of what we were doing in early days. You know, we chased down one area and we said, no, that's not appropriate. And then we kind of turned our attention to something else.
Yeah. And it's, we were chasing our tails a little bit. We had, at one point, we had 5 products with 2 people.
That's right.
And I think that's too much. So, but with good conversations with the fellows around us at iAccelerate, that we were able to have, like, they're asking good questions. And I remember Rob and Nathan asking us, you know, what is it, you know, you're good at? And I think it was Rin was like, okay, you've got this app idea. Who are you going to market it to? Look at your networks. Mm. And it was all those arrows started pointing towards Agile.
Yeah, I think it was this idea that Rin had, like you can build it and they will come, or you can figure out your go-to-market and your distribution piece and what's the audience that you've already got and how do you leverage the audience that you've already got in Agile software development to you know, kind of like seed and build that audience. and get some momentum. And that's what really kicked us along and got us going. And I think, if I'm not mistaken, I think we'd actually, not that we had a lot of outgoings, but I think we were actually break even by June of 2016. And it was kind of like this hurrah moment, because we were not going to have to get on the train and commute to Sydney for working at Atlassian or, you know, something like that. We found product market fit, and we could kind of pursue and go to the next stage.
That's right. Yeah. And there's a lot in that story as well, like how we found product market fit and the steps towards that, and lots of learnings from that time as well, which is great to share eventually, I guess, but we might go down a rabbit hole if we jump into that one. But I certainly do remember good, considered conversations, and they were highlighted by Labington's and T in the Mike Dodd building at the University of Campus, Innovation Campus at University of Wollongong, where we started. And that was really just a time to, like, it felt different to my prior, like at the time, like 15 years of experience, where you're actually, it's okay to stop and talk and think about what you're doing. Whereas in the past, it's just been go, 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 build this thing. And it's like, oh, okay. And so that was really refreshing for me. And I think that that was a really good step in opening up what became the Story Map, which was our first really successful product.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, you mentioned the Lamingtons and tea. It was probably at least 50% of our time getting the business off the ground was Lamingtons and tea. It was chatting about stuff. It wasn't writing code. We didn't have customers to speak of. You know, it was really trying to figure out what sort of market did we want to pursue? What solutions did we want to provide? And what sort of business did we want to create? That was a large part of our time getting it off the ground.
Absolutely. And for those listeners out there who don't know what a Lamington is, it's actually a delicious piece of sponge cake dipped in chocolate sauce and then coconut, shredded coconut. So I know you can buy them in the US. We actually did that at Atlassian, and they were a huge success, especially because they had cream inside them as well. So, yeah, real good. Good for a cup of tea or coffee, whatever you take. But the thing is that it's a good idea to sit down with your co-founder and talk a lot more than you type. That's the kind of rule I took out of that.
You know, it's interesting because it was kind of like that approach to talking instead of typing. It was kind of like the genesis of one of our values, you know, this engaged system too. And I don't think you'd read Kahneman's book at that time. And, you know, that was something that came later. But even just this idea of like, you know, let's just take the time to think and process this sort of stuff. And the context.
I remember. I did a presentation at Atlassian Summit in 2017 on Engage System 2. So
16 or 17,
I can't remember which one it was. But it was
16, because you went to Barcelona in 16.
Barcelona, and that's what I did there, wasn't it? Yeah, so that was early on that I read Thinking Fast and Slow, which I highly recommend.
And the context around this for folks listening, right? So Dave had, in mid-2016, Dave had a nine-month-old daughter. My daughter was 2 years old, and I had a newborn. And you were to have, you know, your number two was on the way, right? So we were building a business as we were, you know, starting and establishing our families as well. So it was, let's do it all in a new city, you know, like let's do it all at once.
Yeah, you may as well, right? Just bite it all off and rip the Band-Aid off and get it done. I mean, my daughters are only 18 months apart, so that kind of, you know, just get it over and done with. Get the hard part done, and then you can go and enjoy yourself afterwards. Just kidding. It's great to have lots of kids at young age. Like, I really do miss that time. But, yeah, we were pretty crazy, but we got through. And
it gave us a constraint as well, didn't it? Because we, you know, we couldn't burn the midnight oil. Like, we couldn't flog ourselves from 5 a.m. to midnight, because we simply did not have the energy, and we had to get kids fed and bathed and off to bed and all this sort of stuff. So, like, It brought a cadence, and now that I reflect on that, there was another value that was kind of coming out of that, which was with respect to our balance and establishing balance in our lives. So it's,
yeah, I do remember a tweet I did. I can probably dig it up, which was me hanging out cloth nappies or diapers on the. It must have been where I was in Balgowney, so that must have been after 6 months. But I was hanging out nappies. I must have been working from home that day or something like that. But that was just like me balancing life like that with work. And I think it came back with like work-life-family balance or something like that. We've expanded that to work-life family community balance
is
what we try and chase.
How did we get on this journey around the values and kind of establishing the values? When was that in the life of the business?
I can remember the place we're in. We were actually in our Crown Street office when we really sat down and really hunkered down into that. So that would have been 2018.
I think in 2018, in November 2018, we held our first Advanced Easy Agile. And that's where you ran the session, "What got us here won't get us there." And so at that point in time, we had the two products. We had Easy Agile User Story Maps and Easy Agile Roadmaps. And we had changed our brand from Aregia Products to Easy Agile to kind of focus our energy on the agile space. And we divested the other three products that weren't focused on agile. So we'd sold those off to another Atlassian solution marketplace partner. And I think that's where we started to have this conversation around like the next evolution of the growth of the business. And then it was in 2019 where when we were back in Crown Street, back in the office, where we were having that conversation about codifying, establishing, writing down our values.
That's right.
Yeah.
And it's a highly valuable process to go through and to really just pause on the day-to-day and really focus on it. And that's something I've always had trouble with. Like, I've always got things to do. But once you just extract yourself from that process and zoom out and look at the company and what you've come up and what you hold dear, that's when you can really start having those conversations. But making it an actual thing, I think that you can't just do it on the side. You can't just do it as well as other things. It's really got to be the priority, as I like to say. Like, priority is not a plural. It doesn't make any sense if it's pluralized, but that should be like what the one thing you do. And in an ideal circumstance, like, you just do it and really focus on it, because it's really hard. And it shouldn't, I guess, not in one sitting, but like, at least when you do it, like, make it a serious thing, because if they're real values and you live them, like, they just are pretty immutable. They just keep moving forward with you. If you find you're not living them, then you should absolutely revisit them. But we've been lucky, haven't we, Nick, in that the values we put forward have stayed true. And I really feel like of all the companies I've worked at, even Atlassian, like, these ones are lived every day in very distinct ways.
Mm. So what are the values we've got? We talked about better with balance, and we talked about that a little bit. We also talked about engage system two, like this system two thinking. What are our other values?
Be the customer, give back. And commit as a team.
Punch above our weight was a big one, and commit as a team. Yeah, so better with balance, give back, be the customer, punch above our weight, engage system two, and commit as a team. What was the, you know, go back to the conversation that we were having in 2017 around give back. Like, that was something that we really system two'd. You know, how did we think about giving back to the community and what that meant to us as a company?
I think it goes back to what you said before about the community in San Francisco we experienced and what we did with Silly Gong and just making that a focal point for us to give back to the community. It doesn't build itself. Like, the community has to be actively built by somebody, has to put their hand up and start it. And I think we did that. And since then, like, we've enabled heaps of other people to be able to give back in a really easy kind of way. Like, just let's host a meetup, that's fine. You know, just here's a framework to go build that on. And also just the daily communication we have amongst each other on our Silly Gong Slack, which is just super valuable.
Like, super active too.
Oh, super active. Especially in lockdown. Lots of people on there talking about all sorts of things.
I think maybe one of the other things, so Dave and I experienced this at Atlassian, which was this idea of the pledge 1%. But in our first or second year of Easy Agile, Atlassian, along with Salesforce and a bunch of other companies, came together to actually codify and build the foundation around pledge 1% and ask other companies to commit to that. And we made that commitment in 2017, if I'm not mistaken, to do pledge 1% donations. And now we're kind of doing pledge 2% donations. But what was the drive behind our pledge 1% to Room to Read?
You know, it's in part laziness, because I really want a system to these kinds of things. And unfortunately, when you're starting a business, it's hard to dedicate the time to think about that. And so I took the easy system one option, which is to go with what we experienced at Atlassian, which was to back Room to Read, which is a great initiative to help ensure that young ladies, specifically in third world countries, get at least a tertiary, I mean, a higher education, get out of primary school, get into high school. And once they've gotten to that point, it's far more likely they're going to be independent. And with that kind of thing, like that investment, it's like really starting at the beginning and enabling countries and people to help themselves. If they're educated, that's a huge step in the right direction to both fighting overpopulation, climate change, all these things which benefit from those people doing well in life.
Mm. Yeah, continually improving their lot in life, right? Like raising standards of living through education.
That's right.
Yeah. And if we think about punch above our weight as one of these other things, I mean, I remember that was something that we talked about before we wrote down our values. Like that was something that we really did focus a lot of energy on. You know, you mentioned before there were two of us and we had five products in the marketplace. I'm not exactly sure that that was a great example of punch above our weight because we might have struggled a bit. But you know, what are some examples of where we've punched above our weight as a small team from regional Australia?
You know, one of our products that we built initially was really a bit of a thorn in my side. It was continually breaking and it wasn't playing to my strengths, which is traditionally front-end development. And so after that and getting burnt by that and having to stay up all night and fix it, I opted towards apps which are more front-end focused. And so we've built Easy Agile user story maps and Easy Agile programs and Easy Agile roadmaps primarily as front-end apps. As a matter of fact, Easy Agile Roadmaps for the first 2 years didn't even have a server. It was just a static file in a bucket in CloudFront. And that's just the nature. That's the way Atlassian Connect works. It allows you to host apps that way. And that really can't break. Like it's just providing a different view on Jira in essence, but it's like architecturally, it's quite simple. And so therefore we could easily, that was a way of punching above our weight and in which also enforces or allows better with balance. So they're kind of complementary in that respect. Yeah. What other ideas?
Yeah. If not much can go wrong, then you don't have to be on call.
That's
right. You don't have to fix things out of hours. So you don't wake up bleary eyed and fat finger another bug the next day that, you know, compounds the problem.
If you take the analogy too far, like you could think punch above your weight is like being able to punch someone really hard and knock them over. But this is more like just definitely just running around the big foe, you know, you're not even engaging in battle. You're just like sidestepping it. And so that's why we've run those products. And until recently, we actually do have servers now for them. And they're once again, they're still very simple, but they're very well monitored. So if something does go wrong, that we're on top of that.
I think one of the other aspects with respect to technology and punch above our weight is we've quite often, I think maybe you mentioned before, you know, with respect to Room to Read and give back the laziness, but we are lazy in certain respects and we just want to automate things. Mm-hmm. And I remember the XKCD comic that you share, you know, with like, what is the right time to automate something and when do you automate it to get the return on investment that you want? But I feel like we've made some fairly good decisions around when to automate things and you know, even around how we provide customer support or, you know, build, test and deploy tooling around the products. Like we've done these things at pretty good times so that we can deliver products to a global audience of a couple of thousand customers from Wollongong out of time zone with those customers.
Yeah. It's also being ahead of the curve as well. So I think Inception Week, which is something we do every fifth week now, we give up 1 week to provide the team with the space to explore new things. Amazing things have come out of that, which otherwise if you were just week to week, you would never actually realize. The one that comes to mind is our dev container, which is a Docker container, which contains all of the parts which are required to develop our apps. You just check out this one repository, run a script, and it sets up your entire development environment. It's a great way for the team to share the tools that help them punch above their weight. So that's a huge punch above our weight thing, and that came out of Inception Week. So I think Inception Week is a punch above thing, and also the dev container is a huge punch above thing. We used to have so many problems with individual versions of this or that on everyone's computer, and now that's just all gone. It's never happening again. It's never come back to bite us since. And I think that's an overwhelming success. Sure, it does eat all your RAM and all your CPU, but it does. We'll get there. Like it's going to get better.
RAM and CPU are cheap. It's okay.
time is, you can't never get time back, right?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, when we think about these things, like how intentional do you think we were around the values and our approach to building and scaling the company versus things that just kind of happened?
Yeah, for a large part of the starting of the business, there was a lot of just get it done kind of mentality stuff, which has to happen. However, I want to harken back to when we started. Everything was chaos. I remember this early 2018, mid 2018. We'd come in on Monday, go, what are we doing today? You're like, what's this week? And let's look at the backlog and have a look. And there was no forethought whatsoever.
And we pick a couple of things off the backlog and we just worked through them that week. And
yeah,
that was it, right? Yeah.
Pretty much. And so you proposed the idea of when it was at the beginning of the year, it must have been 2018. Was it 2019? Either way, let's just do 1 week on Clarity, which is our internal CRM essentially, and just knock out a bunch of bugs and problems. And that was the first time we started focusing, because since we had so many products, I think we actually might have sold them by now at this point. Yeah, I think we definitely had. However,
but we still had roadmaps, story maps, Clarity, EACS, like we had other internal systems that we used, and the team was actually growing beyond Dave and Nick, and it was growing, you know, there was Jared and Sutvik and like Rob, and so the team was growing at that point in time as well. So it gave us the opportunity to put a number of people onto one problem for a period of time, like a week.
That's right. And from that came this idea of focus, and we started doing focused sprints, so product focused sprints, which highlighted another terrible problem of like run over. If you did run over in your estimates, then you would have to come back to that like in 9 weeks or something, and it was just
unworkable. That's right.
So we dropped
that. What did we do? We did 2 weeks on story maps, 2 weeks on roadmaps, 2 weeks on internal systems, 2 weeks on something, and then 1 week on Inception Week.
Yeah, I think
I can't even remember now what that other thing was.
It was 9 weeks in total, wasn't it? So
yeah. If you missed it and you didn't ship it, then we would kind of, we went on to the next product to move that forward, and then we'd come back to it in
ages away. And it was super stressful for the team, and we quickly like destroyed that. But we went like a more flexible approach to it, where we dropped that hard mandate of like, you have to change products now. We let them run over a bit, and then we'd adjust the story points to the next one, blah, blah, blah. And then eventually, I'm scratching my memory, but essentially we got to a point where we introduced opportunities, which was based on loosely on Shape Up by Basecamp. And we took a bunch of things from that, but most things of that didn't really gel with our way of working and our values. And so,
I mean, that whole opportunity cycle, we've evolved 3 or 4 times now.
Yep. And they were ideally like just 2 or 4 weeks of work, and then we'd do Inception Week and Tech Debt Week. And we have a dedicated Tech Debt Week as a mandate, and we've dropped that since. And we have 4 weeks of work, which includes Tech Debt, and then we have Inception Week. And that's kind of cool, right? Like we still have this mandate of Tech Debt. Oh, sorry, a mandate of Inception Week, not Tech Debt Week. And that's the last thing. Like I feel like the mandates, like, because it's like kickstarting a motorbike. You really give a good kick. And that's essentially what we've been trying to do over the last 3 years, is like get this thing running. And I think the engine is now running. Yeah. The engine is now running, and we're pulling the clutch out. It's just that the mandates slowly fall away and the team finds their own way. But I still feel that cycle is the most important thing, that 5 weeks where we stop, everyone knows what's happening. Because if it just runs off into the future forever, people just like, you can't compute that in your mind, but you can see forward 5 weeks and go, I'm going to plan this work. It's not going to be done to an nth degree, because that's kind of a bit weird. Like, it's just like, let's try and achieve this and let's bite it off one bit at a time. And then we'll have a break with Inception Week, let our creative juices flow, and then we'll come back to it the next thing around.
Hey, so I have to call time out here. So this is a sidebar for everyone listening at home. Dave just used this analogy of kickstarting the motorcycle, right, and then getting it into and pulling the clutch out. So one of the things that Dave does tremendously well is he grabs these analogies and he uses these analogies to simplify what are otherwise fairly complex kind of concepts, and simplify them and communicate them really nicely. That's not one I've heard before, but there's a new one that we can add to the repertoire, Dave. I love it.
Thanks, mate.
What other sorts of things? Because I guess we're charting this journey over 5.5 years, where it's gone from Dave and Nick and the addition of Sutvik, and then Tegan and Jared and Rob and, you know, Brad and a few people over time, you know, to the point today where we are 27, 28 people. What are some of the other, you know, markers along the way that we've kind of gone through that have shifted or evolved how we operate? Like the Easy Agile operating system that we've talked about in the past.
Well, aside from what we just discussed in the execution kind of level, obviously every 6 months, everything just goes and explodes and you have to fix it. Like there's always some major thing that happens every 6 months. And I feel that that's good and that's healthy and that we continue to run into those things. Either they're internal or external. And I feel like we're dealing with an external one right now, which I don't really want to touch in this podcast, but like I think that they're healthy for the business to adapt to. But certainly I think in that time, like really understanding that it's the people that count, right? Like it's not about, like the business is in there, you know, like it's a thing, but it's nothing without the people who work for it. And it's in service of the people who work here. As well as the customers. And so that's something we've come out of it. What do you think, Nick? Like the cultural aspects of what we've built, what do you think stands out to you?
I certainly think there's these inflection points. I mean, I remember a conversation with Jared when we were in Crown Street Mall, and it was in 2019, and we were talking with the team about, you know, around the kitchen table there, and we could get 8 people around this kitchen table, and we were talking about growing the team to take advantage of the opportunity and responding to requests from customers and all this sort of stuff. And I think Jared said, well, you know, I quite like it the way it is. And then I fast forward to this, you know, an interview with Jared, which went into the 5-year video that we saw just before Christmas. And that was around, you know, his trajectory and how he's evolved and adapted professionally and personally as the, you know, along with the company. And I think that's a story for all of us as team members. We've all kind of been on a journey together, and we're all learning and adapting together. I really, you know, we do live in many respects. We do live this agile approach where we do reflect and we take the time and we think and we experiment with new approaches to getting work done. You know, even I think, and we've been talking about this a bit recently with respect to pace. You know, that first version of our learning and development program where we wanted to provide funding for people to go and pursue something that they wanted to learn about. Like we got that out. Hey, that was a morning's worth of work. We put out an L&D. People started using the L&D program. And we called it like our version one of our L&D program. And today we're on version, I don't know, 1.4 or whatever it is of our L&D program. Like there's a lot of things that have gone out. And we tweak and we improve them over time to make them ever better and better suited perhaps to the current state of play within the team. Is that fair?
Yeah, it is. It is. And I think that, like, A, I've never worked at a business that has anything like that and where they actively encourage you to use it, spend the money, make yourself better. If you make yourself better, the team will get better. If the team gets better, the customers get better outcomes and the company continues to improve, and it will be probably a better place for you to work in future. So it's really a holistic kind of perspective rather than a narrow mind, like not narrow minded, but like myopic or really focused on just output. It's outcomes of output. And that could be another value of ours. If we wanted to have 7, it'd be outcomes over output. So really stopping, having that permission to stop and think and system to it, and think about what it is you're trying to achieve rather than just blindly doing stuff. So from a developer's perspective, the fastest code is the code that doesn't exist. And so if you can do something differently, which doesn't require 100 steps or just like decide, hey, this is really tricky right now. Like this bit of code we're trying to work on, or this feature is really hard. Can we just delete the feature? And would anyone notice? I know that sounds pretty bold, but quite honestly, that kind of discussion is really healthy to have. And I want to encourage the team to think that way. And I think that learning development is also something you can do to bring people in who are on a look at their trajectory as a way of gauging their abilities and giving them like really throwing fuel on the fire in that respect and seeing them ramp up in their ability and help those around them. So that's
So take us through that, because that's something that we've definitely talked about a few times. Like when we've been looking at candidates and in a hiring huddle around candidates, we've talked about those that are on a certain trajectory and that we think we can accelerate that trajectory. You know, where did that come from?
Where do thoughts come from? I'm not sure. That's a good question. I couldn't tell you. But I think it's pretty obvious when you look at someone's CV and you see, now there's nothing wrong with people who have long tenured positions, but if you talk to someone and they can't really say what they've done in the last 10 years and they've done that one position for 10 years and they haven't really got anything striking they can tell about how they've made that better, that kind of says a lot about that person. Maybe they would come in and they just coast. They're a coaster, right? If they're coasting, that's fine. It's their call. But at the same time, we look for people who are actively trying to make their impact bigger through their work, help those around them. And you can see that. You can see, oh, look, they've been in the same company. That's fine. But they've gone and done these different roles, or they've seen this kind of improvement in their approach.
This comes back, Dave, to that article that were the Financial Review article, the mid-career annuity. Mm. And so this was an article that we must have been kicking around in 2016, 2017. And it was around a Japanese term, mid-career annuity. You could have 20 years of experience in a role, or you could have 21st years of experience. And I think early on, and maybe it still occurs these days. I think it probably does. But it felt like we were getting, you know, 20 quarters of experience. You know, over that 5-year period, there was always some big new challenge that we needed to learn and adapt and incorporate into the business over the first 5 years. And so we were always learning and adapting, and we wanted folks that were on a similar journey, and they were learning and incorporating and adapting and experimenting themselves.
Yeah, it's something definitely that can be learned. And I think that if you bring on new starters, they can just get at, this is what they do by default, because you've put them into that environment. But some environments, especially older companies, can be fairly stagnant and static. And so that just, it reflects on people's CVs. Either there's some kind of reason why the company won't give them a promotion or give them opportunities to chase. However, we have a different approach where we throw too many opportunities at people, I think, sometimes. And I've seen people using their L&D so much that it is actually impinging on their better with balance value. Like I'm like, whoa, like this is fantastic, but don't forget you've got kids and you've got to, you know, help look after them and
temper your enthusiasm. Yeah.
So that's certainly something to look for. Yeah.
You know, stopping and reflecting on 5.5 years, what's the purpose of the business? What's the goal over the next couple of years?
Have fun. Learn. What about you?
Definitely learning.
Stay in business.
Stay in business. Sustainable growth is always a good one. I think that's important. Yeah, I don't know. It's interesting. Like, I feel like some days it can be really fun and other days it's not fun at all. And that's probably due in large part, like when we started this, we were not in service of anyone but ourselves and one another. And now I feel like we are in service of a team of people that are themselves in service of a customer, because we, you know, got a couple of thousand of them. And so it's like the responsibility and the accountability's changed. And the way that fun comes about is these days, you know, it used to be fun to have lamingtons and chats. And these days, like, typically there's someone else in the crew that is organizing the event that I can participate in that I find fun and enjoyable with the rest of the team, rather than being able to carve out that time and do that. You know, I remember when we roped in a bunch of folks from iAccelerate and we went into town and we'd go and we'd get a Luxa in town and we'd get a bowl of Luxa. Like, it's been harder to do that in the past 12 months, given the global environment and all that sort of stuff.
Yep.
So hopefully we can find a bit more of that in 2022.
There may be ramen.
Oh,
there's ramen now.
And it's great. You know it.
Yeah. I think refining what we do and continuing to think more about that. So specifically with the engineers, I like to use a goal-based, like goals are big, right, at Easy Agile. Like, I think you should talk a bit about goals, but we use them to help guide people in chasing down things they want to achieve. And we can align those things with what the business does to an extent. And then you can actually go and achieve your professional goals through the business, or the business of a vehicle to do that, rather than having to do it outside. And that's really cool. Like, find that harmony there, so we can get both Easy Agile can succeed and the people who work here can succeed. And I think it actually is quite difficult. Like, you go, hey, take a step back, think about what you want to achieve, give that to me, and then I'll see what I can do to change the course of the business to help you accomplish that. What can we do? Maybe there's a middle ground we can chase down together. And that's something new to me. I'm kind of using that instead of performance reviews. So yeah, make sure you do your goals, people. But yeah, also you've mentioned a lot, like you want to look back in time and you want to see yourself in the future reflecting with the team when they've gone and moved on.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I was even chatting with Elizabeth Cranston this week, and I was saying, oh, you know, I can picture in the future, you know, you're living down at Naruma down the coast, and I can come down and have a cheese and bickies and, you know, with the families, and you're looking over the bay at Naruma or something, like, and we're reminiscing on this period of time at Easy Agile. I can totally see that, you know. Yeah, I think it's great. And I think, you know, just on the goals are important personally. And we've talked a lot about goals in the past with respect to like 10-year vision for the families and that sort of stuff. But it's also for the business. You know, I remember we had OKRs in place from our, you know, from getting the business off the ground. We've revised them every year. We've learned and adapted a lot over the last couple of years in how we think about our objectives and our key results, and the fact that we, you know, write them on a quarterly basis and we review them on a quarterly basis, but we've got these objectives that align with a business goal that's 3 years out, and it all kind of flows. I mean, I think we're a lot more mature around that aspect of our, I don't know, strategic planning, you know, vision goal setting, you know, over an extended time period. Like, we're a lot more mature around that today than we were 2 or 3 years ago. That's really exciting as well. Come back to what you were saying before about the backlog. You know, we'd come in on a Monday morning and we go, what are we going to work on this week? And we kind of worked over a couple of years, we worked it out so that, oh, there's like, here's the vision for the product. It was, you know, it was a longer term thing. And we've elevated that, and it's not like, hey, what are we doing for the business this month? It's no, here's our long-term trajectory for the business. And we've been elevating that. That's pretty exciting, I think.
And at the same time, trying to get the team to lift their line of sight as well, and look at further afield, like not too far. Like, you want them to be looking at what's happening next week and next month as well, but also what's the goal? What are we chasing down? What's the bigger picture? And I think that's starting to happen. You know,
what's the analogy there about golf, Dave?
Oh, no, can you tell me? I can't remember.
Oh, it was this analogy about golf. Like, you got to look where you're going to hit the ball, and you got to look up. You know, you don't want to look at the tee.
That's right.
You want to look like beyond the tee, so that you're not beyond the tee, beyond the hole. Sorry, you want to look beyond the hole.
Yeah. That wasn't my analogy. That's why I don't remember. But I do remember someone telling us that one. That it's a good one. Like, it was literally, it wasn't even an analogy. I think like a literal thing that the golf tutor would do. Was like,
yeah,
where are you looking? And then they go, oh, I'm looking at the hole. No, you got to look further than the hole. Like, look up where you want the ball to go, and then away it goes. And
yeah, raise your sights.
Raise your sights. Yeah.
Yeah.
And yeah, if you are looking at your feet, then you're probably not going to go far. But if you do look up and take stock, you can probably. That's actually a soccer analogy I can give you. Like, from my soccer coach, like, you got to look, you got to point your toe where you want the ball to go. And it's just a magic thing. It just works. You put your toe next to your foot next to the ball with the pointing at the corner of the goal you want it to go in, and you kick it, and then it just happens. So yeah, there's these funny little hacks like that. And I think that's a long-term vision thing. You know, if you're running a business which doesn't have that long-term vision and purpose, you can go actually in multiple directions at once. And that's not really, you're not going to make any progress. I think a good analogy I read was like with a team, if you imagine everybody, like all the team members are tied to a pole with a rubber band and they're all heading in different directions, like the pole's not going to move because everyone's just, and the company's going to stay static and still. But if everyone just goes in the same direction, then it's going to move along.
Shift it, yeah.
Yeah. And that's something that we've bitten off recently is our purpose.
Mm. to help teams be agile.
Yeah. It was one of those funny moments when we were talking about that. We talked about it for, you know, we set ourselves a deadline, for the sake of a better word, like we had our planning session coming up in a couple of weeks. And so we sat down and talked about it, and we went round and round in circles trying to discover what it is to be, like, not to be agile, but just what is agile. And we know well what it is, but we were trying to codify that in words. And when you said that, like, it's being agile, it was kind of one of those, the way I like to describe it, upside down A moment, which is our logo, as you can see on Nick's jacket there. And so when that was proposed to me, I was like, no, that's so silly. But I was like, oh, but I love it. And I'm not saying that being agile is silly, but the fact that it's so simple, that's what I like about it. It's easy, it's simple, and there's a lot there if you dive into it.
Mm. Yeah. Well, why don't we wrap it there? I think that's a good place to end. Yeah. The purpose, it's to help teams be agile. And doing that, we're doing that for ourselves. We're constantly trying to learn and adapt and experiment with new things in Easy Agile, and as are the team members here. So, yeah, I hope that was a useful little tidbit and journey from Dave and I on how we got Easy Agile to this point and some of the things that have been on our mind.
Yeah.
Thank you, Dave.
Thank you, Nick. That was fun.
That was fun. Oh, brilliant.